Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Friends with Money, Money Magazine's podcast to help you earn, save, and achieve your financial goals. My name is Tom Watson, a senior journalist here at Money Magazine, and as always, it is a pleasure to be with you. Purchasing a property, it can be hard enough as it is, especially if you are doing it for the first time, let alone with all the hot air and misconceptions floating around out there, of which there are many. So on today's episode, we are going to put our myth-busting hats on in order to tackle some of those major misconceptions out there surrounding home buying. And ready to jump on the mic with us with her myth-busting hat in hand, or should I say, on her head, is someone who knows all about the buying experience and the property market. I'm very pleased to say that joining us today is the founder and director of Melbourne-based buyer's agency, Wallis Associates. It's Emily Wallis. Emily, a very warm welcome to Friends with Money. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
I'm very excited to be here and keen to chat about this hot topic.
Yes, misconceptions, property misconceptions at that. So today we're going to do our best to run through five major misconceptions about property buying before finishing off with some more general buying tips, which Emily has very kindly agreed to give us, which I think any budding first home buyers will definitely want to stick around for. But let's get cracking into our misconceptions. And Emily, I believe the first one you want to talk about is related to apartments. So what is the misconception here?
Well, it's probably the most common misconception I hear in the buying side of real estate, and it's that buying an apartment is not a good decision. You know, I wouldn't buy that as your first property. It's no good. They don't grow in value, all these sorts of things. I think the reality is, unfortunately, not all of us can afford to buy a house on land and keep the lifestyle that we want to have. There's always a trade-off between accommodation and location. And in my opinion, apartments offer lifestyle. They're not the biggest. They don't always have a yard. They might have a courtyard, but they offer us access to arterials for transport. Major capital cities are often surrounded by apartments and they have great amenity access. So buying an apartment being not a good decision probably stems from the idea of investment. And that's probably different to what I'm speaking about today. This is more about as a first home buyer, the reality is if you're living in a major capital city, your first place may well be an apartment and that's okay.
Totally okay. And listen, I'm sure you might disagree with me if you want to, Emily, but it can also be a stepping stone, right? Like you said, not everyone's going to be able to afford to buy a house with their first property purchase, but they may want to down the track. And hey, an apartment might be a great stepping stone to do that, or it might be a great place to live more permanently if people, you know, decide to do that.
Indeed. And just, I guess, to clarify on them not all being bad, when you can find an apartment that is in a boutique block that you can have some value add potentially in, like to me, that's the pinnacle of apartment buying is not in those super high rise buildings that unfortunately don't have the greatest growth, trying to hack the apartment space by getting something that's maybe built in the 70s or 80s, solid brick build with some value add potential is a real great spot for first home buyers to enter the market.
Well, we're going to continue on the apartment theme for our second misconception, I believe, Emily. So what are we going to talk about here?
We're going to talk about body corporates, also known as owners corporations, basically the company who manages all the outgoings for the communal areas or communal amenity for the block that you might buy into. Driveway insurance, building insurance, maintenance, that sort of thing. We often hear that body corporates are bad or they're poorly run or they're evil and it's just not the case. Or they're a money grab. Actually, that's the biggest one I hear. Oh, they're such a money grab. That's actually not always the case. But as a buyer, you do need to do your research and digging into what actually, like the health of the body corporate. How is it run? What are the fees? Where are they going? And what does the budget allocation look like for the next year and beyond?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Emily. And we did an episode 113, I actually wrote it down, which runs through all the basics of strata and body corporates for those that are not already in the know, because I know for first home buyers, right, it can it be, can be quite confusing, which, as you said, is why it's important to do a bit of due diligence and I guess get familiar with, you know, strata as a whole and body corporates as bodies that, you know, help run those apartments and those complexes.
Indeed, I think it's a case of buyers need to educate themselves on the right questions to be asking, the information to be looking for. And it varies state to state as to what information is actually provided and mandatory in the contract of sale with an apartment. But the best piece of advice I can give around this particular tip is you can never know too much information about a body corporate. Mm. Call them, find out about them. And the best thing you could possibly do is maybe try and speak to a neighbor who lives in the block and ask how they find the runnings behind the body corporate.
That's a great, great tip. And get onto that, listeners. Our third misconception today is something that my partner and I certainly brought into when we were looking to buy our first home, at least initially, I should say. And that's the idea that you must buy a place with a spare room or even a couple of spare rooms to, you know, facilitate guests. So, Emily, how common is this? And why do you think it can be, I guess, a little bit of a dangerous misconception for people out there to have?
Well, first and foremost, the difference between a two-bedroom and a three-bedroom in, you know, metro areas could be $100,000, maybe even more. You know, land size is bigger. It has an extra bedroom. It's more valuable for families and growing families. I find it really interesting that first home buyers, as lovely as it is to cater for your friends and family, I just find it so interesting that in what already is such a big financial commitment, you're catering towards guests that maybe stay a handful of days a year. Now, there are definitely families out there who have family members interstate or overseas that come and live with them for, you know, like 3 months at a time. And that's definitely warranted to have space for them at that point. But I often ask even my clients, like, do an audit in the past 2 years. How many times has someone stayed with you? And also, as a friend or a family member, when you go to visit someone, do you expect to have a spare room to stay in? Or would you happily stay in an Airbnb or a hotel? Would you even maybe prefer to stay away from the family so you've got your own space? So it's a funny one, isn't it? We try to cater for the needs of others, but your home is yours. And in my opinion, it should only really cater to what you need.
I was laughing silently in the background there, Emily, as you well saw. Listeners wouldn't be able to see that, but yes, that's spot on. I think it's really great to do that audit, as you said, and think about what you really want to use it for. Do you want to use it for hosting people? Absolutely fine. In my case, I'd much rather turn our spare bedroom into a gym for myself, but I'm having to compromise at the moment with some very kind of contained workouts next to the spare bed. So there you go.
Yeah.
So we've talked about apartment buying so far. We've talked about body corporates and strata, and we've talked about spare rooms. So Emily, what's the fourth misconception that you want to address?
The biggest one, and this might be a bit of a sensitive one at the moment, is that the statement of housing in Australia is unaffordable for first home buyers. You know, it's a sweeping statement that often covers the headlines, especially in 2025, saying it's just out of reach, it's unaffordable. To a degree, I can see how that's the case. However, I think it comes back to budget and expectations of first home buyers and understanding that your first home might be a compromise to get into the market. And there are affordable options out there. The question is, where are you prepared to live location-wise? And what accommodation are you willing to have as a minimum? This, I guess, thought process of understanding minimum expectations and adjusting expectations according to a growing real estate market is really crucial in ensuring that you can get into the market as a first home buyer.
I don't want to keep banging on about my own experience, but I think what you're saying there, Emily, is spot on. That kind of time it takes to adjust during the buying process to work out A, what you really want, but B, what you can actually afford. It takes time. It took time for me personally, kind of trying to narrow down the suburbs and what we could really afford, and then coming to the realization that this might not be our forever home. It might be a place that we live in for, you know, 5-10 years, and then you know, move on to something else. And that the fact that that's a possibility, nothing has to be perfect, you know, at the start, and that, you know, it can't be, because most people, most first home buyers have budget restrictions. So I think that's a really excellent point.
Yeah, I think just on that, a lot of us grow up in an area. Our, you know, parents bought in a certain area. We were born and raised there, and we like that, sort of feels like home to us. The reality is that most of those suburbs when our parents bought have, you know, were attainable at the time, and now they're just not. And so it's actually unrealistic to think majority of the time that you could buy back into where your sort of family home was, where you were raised. It's often that we are sprawling outwards, or we're going upwards in that we're looking at more medium density dwellings where it's not a house, it's a townhouse or an apartment as the first property that you buy.
We are on to our final misconception. And I've got to say, it's something that I've seen people discuss, you know, so many times before, online, in person, wherever. So I'm glad we're touching it on it today, I should say. Emily, what is our misconception number five?
Number five, and this one is my personal pet peeve, if I'm allowed to say that, is that people say you should buy under the thresholds to avoid paying stamp duty. So if, in case you're unaware, there are thresholds and concessions where first-time buyers don't need to pay any stamp duty when they purchase a property. They vary state by state. A classic example in Victoria, my home state, is that there's no stamp duty payable up to the value of $600,000, and then it's a sliding scale reduction up to $750,000. Now, so many people I speak to are like, oh, our budget's $600,000. And I often go, is that the budget, or is that because you don't want to pay stamp duty? And probably I'd say 80% of the time it's, I don't want to pay stamp duty. Stamp duty is painful to pay. I agree. Like it's such an annoyance to pay. You look at this, you know, large sum of money going to the state revenue office, and it is a large revenue generator for each state. However, it could be the difference between you getting a B grade property, so like a, you know, a mediocre property, versus an A grade property that in, you know, 5-10 years time would well outperform your B grade property just by paying a little bit more if you can afford it. You know, that might be the difference between $600,000 and $650,000.
So great if you know, you're in a situation where, you know, your budget is below the threshold and you're able to avoid paying stamp duty, fantastic. But it shouldn't be the be all and end all when you're looking for a property. Is that the kind of takeaway there, Emily?
Yeah, it shouldn't be, your budget shouldn't be based on the stamp duty threshold. It should be based on what budget can I afford and what budget do I need to achieve what I want to purchase. Any stamp duty reductions, take them as a bonus.
Yep. Totally get that. It's a painful thing, as you said, but it can't be the only thing you think of at the end of the day. So, all right, we have cleared up some of the major misconceptions about home buying, and by we, I mean you, Emily. But at the start of the show, I promised that we'd get into some property buying tips as well. So, Emily, given that this is very much your line of expertise, is there anything I guess you'd like to impart on any budding home buyers that are listening in right now?
For sure. I think the biggest one that comes to mind is know your options. There are a lot of people out there wanting to buy their first home, but they're also debating whether they should be rent vesting. So buying an investment property as their first property and renting where they currently are, or something that offers them lifestyle. Well, that's a really real situation for a lot of people. So know your options. The second one would be around having pre-approval. The amount of buyers who are shopping around without really knowing how much money they can borrow. Unfortunately, just a calculator on a bank website doesn't always give you an accurate read. It's not a human, it's a computer assessing it. So a human read application is really, really important. I think people underestimate the value of that. And then probably the third one that springs to mind around home buying is be very careful who you involve in the process, i.e. mum, dad, friends, auntie, uncles. Everyone's going to have an opinion on what you buy, but you're the person living in the property. So your opinion and your feel of it matters the most, certainly not the opinion of others, even though I'm sure they'll be quick to give it to you. Just be very careful who you listen to.
Great point, and ties in very nicely to that spare room piece, I think, that we talked about earlier in the show. Listen, I think that's a good place as any to begin wrapping things up today. But Emily, before we let you go, I know that, you know, in addition to running your own buyer's agency, you're also very active on social and on the airwaves as well. So where can people find you if they'd like to?
My most active platform is probably TikTok these days. If you just search Emily Wallace, I'm sure I'll pop up. I also co-host the This Is Property podcast. If you type it into wherever you find your podcasts, you'll find us there as well. But love giving a lot of free information for people out there. It can be tough buying, so hopefully there's some value in the content that you see.
Well, go and check that out, dear listener. I'm sure Emily would appreciate it. And we very much appreciate Emily coming on Friends With Money. So thank you so much. And we'll very much look forward to getting you to come back on the show as well, Emily.
Sounds like a plan.
That's it for this episode of the Friends With Money podcast. But don't forget to jump on our website, moneymag.com.au, for your daily dose of financial news. Or you can go grab yourself a copy of the latest edition of Money Magazine in all good newsagents. As always, Friends With Money will be right back in your podcast feed next week. But until then, my name is Tom Watson. Goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends With Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.